This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, all you bird brains, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman. Glad to have you back, and I hope you guys had a great opening day. I'll talk a little bit about opening day briefly. I had the opportunity to go back up to that piece of public land that I've been able to get two of the three tags punched on. I shot a buck and a bear, and I was able to spend some time there opening day. I hunted from first light until noon and had a great hunt. I heard some birds, heard quite a lot of birds. There was nothing I could do with them. Unfortunately, where they were gobbling and the area they were in, I couldn't exactly pinpoint locations. I am not going to lie, some of the places, if I knew exactly where they were, I probably would have dove in. But one of the big problems I had was dive into some of these mountains and hollows and bowls and stuff, man, you get into some pretty crazy terrain and stuff like that. And it'd be one thing if you knew exactly where he was gobbling, and I'd embrace the suck, as this guest this week said to do. But I have a hard time doing that for a bird. I don't even know where he is. He could have been on another mountain, and it was bouncing off and sounded like it was closer than it was. So I struggled with diving in further than I already did. But I put a lot of miles on, heard some birds. I had a good hunt with my dad. I got to spend some time with him. In the past few years, we've made it a point that at least opening day we go turkey hunting, and we do it together or on the same mountain together. And it's been fun doing that, and I'm going to try to continue doing that, you know, as much as we can. You know, do we cover ground the way I would? No. You know, my dad's had two knee replacements. He's had some shoulder operations. He's got aches and pains. So do we move around the way I would move if I hunted by myself? Absolutely not, but I wouldn't trade it. I still enjoy hunting with him. The funniest thing that happened, he was all happy and proud. He got this new fanny pack. He didn't want to take a backpack he doesn't usually take a turkey vest, but he had this fanny pack that he was using. He just got it. He was talking this thing up, but it was well priced, and he had, these, you know, handy pockets and this and that. And he goes to take a leak and has to take this fanny pack off. And it took him 5 minutes to get readjusted between his drawstrings on his pants and this fanny belt. And he was starting to get fit to be tied and say some choice words. And I just stood there and laughed at him. I'm still laughing as I'm thinking about it, because it was just comical to see him, this man, just get frustrated over an article of clothing and a bag that held all his goodies. And then the other thing that was funny, I'll pick on him a little bit. The one time, you know, I was getting all into hunt mode, and I'm thinking, man, this next spot, I'm gonna sneak out this ridge over here, and I think I'm gonna call down into this bowl here, and I'm not gonna call until we get sat, because, you know, we haven't heard a bird gobble for a little while, but I know this is a good feeding area. And I thought, if I get right to the edge of this thick stuff, I might be able to coax a bird into there, maybe silent or something like that. And we go sneaking up. I told him this whole spiel about what I was gonna do, and, you know, I wasn't going to call until we were sat down and situated. So I get up there, rake leaves. You know, I'm strategic how I rake leaves. I didn't just, you know, rake them normally. I raked them like I thought turkeys were feeding, like it was scratchings, right? And we sit down, and I'm almost ready to call because I think he's ready and I'm ready. And he gets out a candy bar and is opening the wrapper. I'm just like laughing. I was like, okay, I'll wait till he finishes his candy bar before I make my first call. It just made me laugh. It was a good day with Dad, and I'm going to continue to try to do that as much as possible because it's fun. Hoping to get out a little bit more. As I'm recording this, I'm going to be going out Monday morning. Then I'm going to have a little bit of a hiatus until I get back out again. But I'm going to try to make it happen. So we're doing the week two of talking about the season. As this episode drops on May 6th, talking about the next 7 days and how to approach it. And I decided I want to have Jake Stanish back on the podcast. We had him back in April, had a turkey hunting conversation that was a lot of fun, and it was so much fun I wanted to do it again, and we'll talk about these next 7 days. So that's what you're going to hear from us this week, is the next 7 days of this turkey season and what's going on in Jake's mind and how he's approaching stuff and how, you know, the conversation we had feeding back and forth. So good luck, stay safe, and enjoy this episode. Please check out our sponsors if you would. Radix Hunting, makers of great gear, trail cameras, blinds, tree stands, feeders, and a host of other things. Check it out. Also, please check out Little Mountain Outfitters. Everything bow hunting is their slogan, but they got beyond that. If you go to littlemountainoutfitters.com and use the code WOODSMAN10, check out the gear they have to offer, and you get 10% off of your next purchase. Support local business and support this show. I really appreciate you guys listening. Good luck this season. The last one was a lot of fun, so I had to re-get him on again for turkey season. Jake Stanish from Long Branch Game Calls, welcome back to the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Mitchell. It's great to be here. It's, in my opinion, the best time of the year. It's turkey season in Pennsylvania, finally, after a long wait and a brutal off-season in the winter. We had some nasty weather, at least up my way, and I'm happy that it's spring and we can start enjoying ourselves again.
You know what's painful for me? Like, I get hyped up for turkeys, and about the time we start, everybody else that's in the world of, like, media and YouTube and content, they're, like, shutting down. Like, turkey season's towards the end for most people throughout the country, because a lot of seasons end the beginning of May. It's like for the southern half of the country. The northern half is a different part, but a lot of those, you know, big time southern turkey hunters, where a lot of that turkey hunting content comes from, like I think it was last year, the Hunting Public dropped their last video for the Turkey Tour 2025 before we even started. And I was like, what the heck? I'm just getting started and everybody's quitting. But I know it's a different time, different place.
I know. That's crazy to me. And it's really ironic, too, to think that before Pennsylvania even begins most years, all my friends that live in Florida that have been turkey hunting for the last month and a half to 2 months, they're already over. And it's like, well, what do you do with yourself during the month of May if you're a turkey hunter and your season's done already? I guess you can travel to other states, but to me, it just, I don't know. I guess it's just different because we wait till late April, early May before we can really go. And a lot of my friends in the southern part of the country have been hunting for the better part of 2 months, whether at home or traveling all over the country. So it's definitely nice to see that things are starting to happen around here. Turkeys are gobbling and we're able to start hunting.
I just saw a video too, and I'm sure it's somebody from the southern half of the country that's, you know, been turkey hunting for a while and probably grinding out and getting tired. But I saw this video, and it was something about the average turkey hunter, and he gets up and kicks his decoy and says, "I'm done hunting turkeys. These birds are stupid. Except I'll probably go tomorrow. I should go pick my hat up again." And I was watching that. I was thinking, we're just going into this season, but you know what? It probably won't take me long to have that attitude.
Yeah, sleep deprivation is an interesting part of turkey hunting. Well, really hunting anything where you're getting up and putting that kind of time into it. But I know in a couple of weeks, I definitely it starts taking its toll on me, and you start getting delirious and your thoughts aren't complete. It's really funny what not getting a lot of sleep for that long and trying to get a turkey to cooperate and do what you want it to do will do to your mental state of mind.
For sure. Well, this episode's coming to us almost a little bit semi-live as we're recording this because we just started turkey season, and we're doing this series where we want to talk about approaching the next 7 days. And I want to talk about that with you. I want to talk about what happened to your opening day and talk about just turkey hunting in general. But the first question I have to ask you has nothing at all to do with turkey hunting. It has to do, so we did that last podcast together, right? And of course, with all the social media stuff, you link accounts and share reels together and stuff. And then I, of course, see a lot of Long Branch Game Call stuff. And you were at some shows with your wife and family and stuff like that. But I have to ask, do you put a time and advertise for the time when you and your wife are going to do a dance and show at each of the shows? Because that video, you guys dancing, I didn't know if that's how you brought some clientele in. So I want to know about that. What was that all about?
Yeah, that just kind of happened. It's funny what computers can do, and it's amazing that your hand can go through somebody else's shoulder when you watch the video, and you can see when you watch it closely.
Yeah, I know.
I never knew I had those kind of moves before.
I thought that was hysterical when I watched that. You know, this whole world of AI is crazy, isn't it?
Oh, it's wild what it can do. I mean, and there's some versions of it, and it can be pretty realistic at times, but normally it hasn't gotten to the point where it can completely replace a talented photographer or videographer. That's the scary part, because the people that tote the cameras into the woods and they hone their craft. You know, they're very good at what they do, and you hate to see AI take that away from them. I mean, it can be beneficial with helping create documents and other things for work, but man, it's a little bit scary when you see just what it can figure out and just what it knows, and especially noticing and picking up people and photos. Kind of scary what its true possibility is.
I think you just missed a great opportunity to just say you had that good of moves, though.
Probably did, but everybody that knows me knows that's not me.
I like the realism. So, yeah. Hey, before we get into talking about the discussion that we had planned here, I want to know, how was opening day?
Opening day, it was a slower day, but we had fun. I went out the day before. I did a lot of scouting and found a lot of really good opportunities and places for us to go. So went in and put up a blind. We've been taking my 6.5-year-old daughter this year, which has been a blast. It's really cool taking one of your kids with you and showing them one of the activities that you really, really enjoy. So that's been fun, showing her what turkey hunting is all about. But sadly, we have really been void of any turkey action so far this year. We heard 2 gobbles on Youth Day, and then on opening day on Saturday, we didn't hear a turkey. But up here, it was pretty wet. It rained the night before, and then it got bitterly cold. And the turkeys had lockjaw where we were at. I know they were close to us, but for whatever reason, they weren't gobbling. Maybe they moved a little bit at night. I don't know. I was baffled and still kind of stumped, overthinking it as I usually do, just trying to figure out, well, why didn't we hear them? You know, if you don't kill one, that's one thing, but I thought for sure we were going to hear them and at least be able to work some, maybe call one in, let her see one up close, strut and gobble and put on a show and do their normal springtime behaviors. But so far, things have been pretty slow, but not from a lack of turkeys and a lack of gobbling. They just, the days that we hunt, we could hunt, the weather changed and some switch flipped off with the turkeys.
They're a finicky bird, that's for sure. What's your hunting schedule going to look like? Are you going to be able to get out a pretty good amount of mornings for at least a little bit? Or are you going to be on rotation with your wife? What's that going to look like?
We're going to rotate. It just really depends on what each of us have going on during the day. So usually what we end up doing is the first one of us that gets a turkey, then the next one will go as many days as they want the rest of the season until they kill a turkey, or until they get to a point where it's like, man, I need a day off. I need to sleep in. You go tomorrow type of thing. So it works out really well that way. In years past, we've usually hunted a state that is around a neighboring state of Pennsylvania. Last year we did Maryland. We hunted West Virginia a couple of times, Ohio, places like that so far. But this year we didn't get anywhere else. You know, we're busy with the kids and all of that, so we didn't make it out of state this year, unfortunately. Hopefully next year we'll get back on track with hunting somewhere out of state. But normally she'll end up shooting a turkey out of state, and then we'll kind of go back and forth once we get home and split the rest of the time up, which works out really well. You at least get a decent amount of days, both of you, to hunt, and you're still getting some time in the woods, even if it's only 45 minutes or an hour or two in the morning first thing. It's way better than not getting to go at all. I know that much.
100%. So meat and potatoes of this episode, as we go through this, and you know, my goal is to put some content out that the folks who are like me and a lot of other guys, that a lot of time they're hunting the weekends, right? You know, they're looking forward to hunting Saturday, and we've got an opportunity to talk about the next 7 days from the time that this episode drops on Wednesday, May 6th, and putting an emphasis on Saturday, but truthfully, the next 7 days from Wednesday, May 6th to Wednesday, May 13th, I believe that would be. If I'm doing my math correct. Yeah, Wednesday, May 13th. So let's talk about this. You know, you had an opening day that was a little bit on the slow side. And I've heard so many people talk about, if you don't get it done opening week, it's a different world. And weekend number two is usually the nail that seals the coffin as far as adding pressure on the birds and this and that. So when you hear things like that, Jake, what is your initial response?
My initial response is that it can be more difficult the longer that the season goes on. There's obviously your hot gobblers that are all by themselves. You're typically your two-year-olds and some of your Jakes that get killed opening weekend and opening week. You know, the easy ones, the ones that are closer to the road. Yeah, a lot of those end up getting killed early, and that is what it is. It's just part of it. You have to learn to deal with that. You know, turkeys that you would listen to for a month before the season, saw nobody around, you thought you had to yourself, and then somebody goes and takes a long hike one day before the season, finds them, gets in there and shoots one before you get to hunt them. Unfortunately, you hunt public land. It's part of it, and you just have to constantly be willing to adapt. I disagree with that to an extent. It gets harder, but it's not impossible. I do well opening week, and I also do well usually the third week and the fourth week of the season. For whatever reason, the second week of the season coming up is the one that typically gives me fits, if anything gives me fits. On a normal spring, what I notice in the areas that I hunt is that the gobblers start to really get henned up again, and your gobbling starts to go down. So is that truly only because of hens, or is it because of the increased amount of pressure? People riding around, stopping, calling, owl hooting out the window. That plays a role in it. People walking and calling. Some of those turkeys were called in and shot at, or with another gobbler that got killed and they got spooked. So all of that plays in, and it seems like that next week the goblin can go down a little bit. But that just means you really have to get out and make sure your homework's done ahead of time. You know, anytime you're able to get out and scout is always beneficial. Even if you just hear one turkey gobble once or twice from the limb at night during the week, if you're going to go out in the morning before work for an hour, maybe you have a vacation day. Any amount of time you can spend in the woods is going to, you're going to learn something from it if you're able to really dissect that situation and think through what happened and why it happened. A lot of times you can teach yourself something and learn something from each encounter and each hunt and it really trip into the woods that you take.
I'm going to give you a scenario and talk about how I overthink things. And then I want you to talk sense into me because I think this is a scenario that I could probably flip on you and we could probably flip on anybody listen to this. So the example I'm going to give you is not actually from turkey season this year. It's actually from bear season a couple of years ago. I had put so much preseason preparation in for that hunt. I had built up this anticipation and this game plan that I thought in my mind, I would be shocked if this doesn't play out because I felt like I had it down that well. And I really didn't. So what happened, I did not harvest on opening day the way I expected. And the exact same thing that you were just talking about here a little bit ago with turkeys happened. Unanticipated hunting pressure and people pressure and people doing things that I didn't necessarily anticipate was going to happen. And from that very moment on, 24 hours into that hunt, not even 24 hours, because opening morning is whatever, 7 o'clock. And that evening when I was laying in bed, I was already overthinking the hunting strategy that I had played out for the rest of the week because of one day of hunting pressure. Now, let's talk about this from the standpoint of turkey hunting. You know, you could have went out, and I had this happen to me a little bit on Saturday, but like I went out, I heard birds, I heard other people working birds, I got screwed up a little bit here and there, and my mind starts racing about all these things. Oh, this pressure's added, things are going to be changing in the woods, the weather's going to change. I start to overthink this thing and start to make drastic changes to how I'm going to approach things. So my question to you, Jake, is at what point do you think that behavior that experience is rational and we need to pivot on those hunting decisions that are different than our original game plan from what we'd originally established scouting and preparing? When do we deviate from that plan or when do you say, okay, I did my homework, I need to ride this out?
What I usually do in that situation, I'm blessed. I get to, like we talked a little bit ago, I'm blessed. I get to hunt, you know, a little bit every week, you know, a couple days, maybe 3-4 days a week, 2-3 days, somewhere in there, multiple days. You can't really write a spot off if you go in there one morning, you don't hear any gobbling. You know this as well as anybody, Mitchell. You could have the most beautiful bluebird, calm, cool morning. That morning you wake up and you're getting in the truck in the morning, you're like, man, we're going to kill them today. There's going to be all kinds of action. You get out there and there's nothing. And then the next day you go back and it's overcast and they're gobbling their brains out. It's hard to really know what makes them gobble on any given day. We have our opinion and they're going to do what they want to do at the end of the day. So what I'll usually do is give a spot a couple days. If I don't hear turkeys, and usually after the second hunt, then I start getting more mobile. And I'm looking for sign and seeing if, okay, is a gobbler still here? Are there turkeys still here? Am I seeing scratching, droppings, wing feathers? Are you hearing hens or jakes yelping, gobblers yelping? Is there other vocalizations that you can hear other than the gobble that can give you a clue as to what's going on? Because a lot of times when these gobblers will get with hens, you may not hear any gobbling on the limb, or you might hear one or two, and then they fly down and shut up. So that'll usually give you a good clue as to what's going on, and something else to key in on is then you're going to want to think about, okay, what are the hens doing, and where are they going, and how can I get in front of them to beat them where they're going and set up in the direction of travel those gobblers are going to go, following the hens. And then that can put you in the right spot. If I go in there and don't hear any gobbling after usually two hunts, and I walk around and there's no sign of life at all, like the turkey's completely left or something changed, or you go in there a couple times and you're not hearing them, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go somewhere else. Maybe I'm going to stay in that general area, but try another ridge, a place that you couldn't hear from where you were those 2 days or so that you tried another spot. But really, when it starts to change like that, what you need to do is start looking for places that people aren't willing to go. Maybe it's a longer walk, not always a hard walk. Sometimes it's just a longer walk. Maybe you need to hunt a spot that's real steep, real rough terrain, a place that's not fun for us to go. But a lot of times if you do that, you may not have to go as far as you think to put yourself in a better position than where you were at. But really, to me, what it boils down to is if you go in there and you don't hear gobbling, then you need to start looking for other clues to tell you what is actually going on with those turkeys.
You know, it's funny you brought up about the second week being tough. I have said that same thing in the past, and I've had some conversations with some other turkey hunters, including, you know, my good friend Jason, who I've had on the show a couple times, and he said something very similar, that there's something about the second week that's just off most of the time, not all the time. And that's a mental strain, right? And that's where you can really start to get in your head. So I guess just on the surface, how do you keep a positive attitude and keep a mental sharpness or focus during that time that can become challenging? Because it seems like week two, based on this conversation and other conversations I've had, it's a turning point. It's the things are starting to shift a little bit, and it's not like it's a light switch flip. It's like a slow revolving door as it goes from that early part of the season to maybe you'd call it that mid season or late season type strategy, however somebody wants to describe it. So first off, how do you keep a positive attitude and a positive mindset?
I mean, I'm just like everybody else. I can lose my cool and lose my patience and start getting frustrated and fed up just like everybody else if you're not hearing turkeys or if you're running into a lot of unexpected hunting pressure in places that you didn't think you would. I'm just as guilty as everybody else. My attitude can start to suck. But for me, what I do is I just start to think about it logically and think, you know, you love this time of the year. Quit being a wimp. And get your butt out of bed and keep going. Eventually, you're going to find a turkey that wants to play the game. It's just a matter of how hard you're going to have to work to get to that point. For me, with turkeys, I don't necessarily get fed up to a point where I'm going to quit. That almost fuels me more because I want to figure it out. Not necessarily I'm going to get even with them. It's you may have fooled me a couple of times, but I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to get into a place that maybe nobody else has been yet that season, or just be in the right place that turkey's lonely and lost his hens. I remember this several years ago. I was hunting this one spot. There's a ton of gobblers in that year. I hunted these turkeys every day until May 22nd before I finally got an opportunity at one. It took that many days for these gobblers to finally lose their hens, and then two of them ran in like they never heard a hen before. So you just have to keep going as much as you can, because every day you have an opportunity when you're out there to see something that you've never seen before. That's one thing too that keeps me going when you start getting tired and you start having a poor attitude is you may go out today and see a fawn being born. Not something that's outside the realm of possibility to see that time of the year, but how many times you actually get to see something like that? Or maybe, you know, later on in the season, you're going to see poults run around. That's really neat to see. I've only seen that maybe a handful of times in all the days and the hours I've spent in the turkey woods. Or maybe you're going to see a gobbler fight or a gobbler breeding a hen or something that happens in nature, but we don't get to see it as often. So to me, I'm just thankful for every day I get to spend out there. Maybe in that exact moment, I'm more frustrated and fed up and just getting up and kind of going through the motions, but the more time you spend in the woods, the better off you're going to be. You know, just like a lot of people use to describe the rut. You could have the worst season ever, and it's going to change in 10 seconds when that doe brings that buck right underneath the tree stand. You just have to be there for it to happen.
That's a good point. That's probably one of the things that I've probably got in my head over the years turkey hunting, was that turkeys are hunted, they're being hunted repeatedly throughout the season, they're getting pressured, and it's getting harder and harder for them to break loose, and the chances of one breaking loose are slim and none. But I have experienced that where it's like a light switch flips, a hen leaves, an attitude changes, and it's almost like a bird either forgets everything that's happened from up until that point, or sometimes another bird moves into the area. Sometimes you'll be hunting areas that there's not turkeys, you know, frequenting that much, and then all of a sudden a bird moves in and things just work out. One of the questions I'd like to get into, and this is probably one of those rabbit hole conversations because it's the part that, you know, you probably enjoy the most, and that's calling. And, you know, you're a call maker, and everybody loves talking to turkeys. So at what point do you start to say, I need to adjust my calling strategy? So let's start this off by, let's back up a week. Talk to me about how you like to approach calling, whether it's first light off the roost or mid-morning till noon, the first week of the season. And then to piggyback off that, will that change going into this second week?
So to start, I normally almost always tree call to a turkey in the limb. I know there's some people out there that say they don't like to do it. They wait till the turkey flies down. In my opinion and my experience, I have better luck when I tree call to the turkey. Now, if it's a particular gobbler and you know if he hears hens, he goes the other way, sure. Maybe it makes sense then to wait till he hits the ground or just set up in the direction he wants to go and then just call real soft and rake the leaves and adjust your strategy that way. But to me, I normally almost always tree call at least once or twice. Just some really, really barely audible tree yelps with some clucks mixed in. If there's hens in the game, I hear them, then yeah, I'm going to add in maybe a fly down cackle and try to be the first hen on the ground. But you really need to be careful when you're tree calling because you don't want to overdo it. If you overdo it, I've seen turkeys sit up there and wait for the hen to fly down and land almost underneath them, or fly down and walk to the within eye shot of where that gobbler's roosted, and then he'll fly down with her. I've seen gobblers do it numerous times. You hear the hens and then they fly down, and then he stands up there until he sees them, and then he drops down, and then they walk away. Because if you call more, you're making that gobbler think, oh, hey, she's really excited to see me and hear me. I'm going to wait for her to come to me so she doesn't leave. So that's how I'll approach the morning usually, depending on how tight I get. Now, if I can see him in the tree, it might be a little bit of a different situation. It just really depends on the situation for me. But for the most part, I'm at least going to give him a couple of tree yelps. Unless you're in a position where you think if you call, he's going to see you, and maybe it makes more sense for you to wait till he hits the ground and then call.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
And then as far as going later in the morning, a lot of times I like to cover ground. Some people like to cover ground. Some people are more patient, especially if they hear a gobbler at daylight. I'm sure it works, but I'm just an impatient person by nature, so I can't sit still in one place all morning or for a long period of time if I'm not working a bird or I don't hear one at least every 15 minutes or periodically, you know. So I'm going to get up and start covering ground. Usually just I'll walk and call every, I don't know, couple hundred yards. Just when I get to a place where I feel that my calls from the last time that I stopped haven't reached out and gotten into a valley or a ravine, I'll call again too. But usually what I'll try to do when I do that, I'll start out a little softer. Just start to maybe, not tree yelp, but I'll just do some regular hen yelps. and mix in some cutting to try to spark a gobble out of a turkey. But one thing you really need to keep in mind is when you get a turkey to gobble, if he only gobbles at cutting, a lot of times that's a courtesy gobble, or as a lot of people call it, a one and done or a shock gobble. So you really want to make sure you take that gobbler's temperature, especially if you're getting ready to go hillside to hillside on them and cover some ground to get to them. I usually have a rule of thumb. I'll either hit him with a locator call and see if he'll gobble at a crow call or pileated woodpecker or a hawk or something else, or if he'll answer a regular yelp. A lot of times what I've found out is that if that gobbler answers a less aggressive call more than once, he's typically ready and he's at least going to come partway to meet you. So you have to take his temperature and then figure out the you know, your best way to get to him. But really my calling strategy is going to depend on the turkey himself. Mm-hmm. After I strike him and you kind of see where he's at on the hill or in the valley and just kind of figure out a good way to be able to close the distance to him. But until you really get that response from me, I'm not going to change a whole lot from week to week unless I start to notice a gobbler or gobblers in general that year aren't responding to louder aggressive calling. Then I'll tone the calling down to match more of what their mood is. And that's another thing too people need to keep in mind is if the turkeys aren't making a whole lot of louder aggressive type sounds in your area, try to tone your calling down or match your calling with what you're local turkeys are doing, and a lot of times you'll have a lot more luck because the gobblers are going to think that you're one of them and not some turkey from another area or some foreign turkey that they don't know, because I truly believe that a gobbler knows that individual hen's voice because he spends so much time with her.
So with that exact same concept, talk to me a little bit about call selection, call volume, and call tones. Because I think I get guilty of this. I end up gravitating towards the call that I want to run, the one that I think sounds the best. So there's a certain mouth call that I keep going back to because I feel like it's the easiest one to do the sounds I want to do with it and this and that. But in all reality, I usually carry I have 5 mouth calls in my little pouch, and I got a box call and glass and slate call and this and that too. So, talk to me about how you approach that. Do you like to rotate calls throughout the season? Do you like to rotate calls throughout the day? Talk to me about what you're thinking as you go from, you know, maybe raspy old hen to little Jenny yelps or something like that.
I try to match the tone of the call based on the hens that I hear in that area for the most part. Like personally, I prefer a call that's kind of like a mid-range. It has some rasp in it, but I can still get a nice clear front-end yelp on it. That's kind of the sound that I think sounds more realistic to the turkeys that I hunt. It's kind of that medium in between. But I do have some calls that are on the raspier side. You know, box call is great for that. Some different diaphragm calls. But really, I'm more of a mouth call guy through and through. I'm way better running a mouth call than I am a friction call. So I can do more versatile sounds with a mouth call. You know, anything from tree call to cutting and gobbler yelps, jake yelps, I'll mix in depending on the time of the year. You know, as you get closer to the end of the season, I've had luck gobbler yelping or even jake yelping at gobblers if they hang up or doing what they call the caulking, where you hear a jake that lets out like a broken up 3-note yelp, just like raw, 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 raw. And a lot of times they do that when they're with a gobbler that's strutting, I found out. So if you're working another turkey, you can sometimes play on the jealousy end of him and do that and get him to at least get curious enough to peek up over the hill and start looking and thinking, hey, where'd this jake come from? I thought I had him with me, but he moved up over the hill with a hen. And sometimes that's enough for that gobbler to come up and see who's trying to take another hen away from him. I've also had luck just depending on how far I want the calls to reach, using a box call or even a glass call is great for a windy day. I don't use a glass call a lot. I prefer a slate personally. I like the way that they sound better, to my ear at least. and just kind of switch through my calls that way. But I'm definitely one that leans towards mouth calls more so than anything. Hands-free, I feel more confident in it. And that's something else to be said, too. If you have a call that you prefer, a lot of times you're going to sound more like a turkey on that because you have the confidence in it and you've used it and practiced with it more so than a lot of your other calls you have in your vest. And that's another point, too, is you want to take more than one because regardless of what we think sounds the best, a gobbler's the ultimate judge. You know, if he likes it, that's all that matters. Like, I know one year I had this turkey I was trying to call in for a friend of mine. And I went through every call in my vest that morning, and he would gobble intermittently at him. But I pulled a tube call out and gave him a couple of yelps on it, and that gobbler almost ran us over. And he was dead within 5 minutes of me hitting him with a tube call twice. He really liked that deeper, raspier sound that I got from the tube call, and he came charging in, and that was the end of it. If I didn't have the tube call, he'd probably still be on that hillside gobbling, but you just really need to not be afraid to try different things. You know, if your diaphragm calls aren't working, sometimes you need that higher pitched, higher frequency friction call to drag it out of them. It just kind of depends on the area you're hunting, what the weather's doing. If it's windy, you know, you're going to need something that's a little bit louder to reach out and cut through that wind. Maybe it's a call that has a little bit of a softer tone, like a purrpot or a slate that you can really tone it down if you're going to use it for calling to a turkey while he's still in the roost. A slate call is great for that. You can really tone those calls down and get some excellent clucks and purrs out of natural slate as well.
I heard a concept the other day from another turkey hunter that I like the way they were thinking about this, and I want to play this to you and just see if it's something you employ or if it's more situational. And this is kind of a hard one to really explain over an audio podcast because, I mean, let's face it, we're talking about things that can be situational, and that can be very, very tough because your experiences sometimes are just really, really hard to just elaborate on audio. But the concept was, if you're going to continue to hunt the same properties throughout the course of the season, don't let all of your tricks out of the bag right away because you're going to have to play multiple plays and multiple days on that bird possibly. So the scenario this person ran was, you know, you start off with your what we're going to call introductory, basic type calls. And a lot of time when I think of that, I think of your yelp, your cluck, and your purr. And maybe you talk intermediate when you're getting into cutting and cackling and how you might use that throughout the morning. And then he talked about using advanced calls and this advanced call theory of talking about Jake yelps and gobbler yelps and throwing a gobble at him and maybe whines and wheels and all these other stuff and talking about the scenario. And he laid this concept out of you know, if I'm going to hunt this bird, I don't want to throw the kitchen sink at him on one day that I'm going to have to play him another day. And I like that. But on the flip side, the thought was going through my mind of exactly what you were just describing with that tube call. Sometimes it can be one call to the next where a bird just flips a switch on that call. And the other thing, too, is as experienced of a turkey hunter as you are, Jake, you can probably think of scenarios and behaviors of what you're trying to mimic and how that might get a bird to, you know, cross the barrier, so to speak, and poke that bubble. So I'm rambling enough. My question to you is, where do you fall into those concepts? One end of the other or somewhere in between?
Kind of somewhere in between, really, because there is some truth to that. But at the same time, you might be hunting him on a day where he's somewhat vulnerable, but maybe he's not just going to charge in if you give him, you know, some plain hen yelps. And maybe you need to kind of finesse him a little bit and just reassure him and really get him excited enough to come the rest of the way to come check out your setup. But this takes me back to a hunt that I had several years ago. I had a gobbler I got close to in the limb. He flew down. I saw him out in front of me at about 100 yards, and he walked away from me. And I couldn't understand it. So he gobbled the whole time he walked away. And I thought, well, he must have a hen that I can't see. So I got him to gobble again, and I just got this idea in my head that, you know what, I'm getting as close to him as I can, because he started to gobble on his own then, and I'm gonna see what I can do with him. And it was getting to the point where I was going to have to leave him anyway, so I figured, well, you know what, He's one of those turkeys that was close to the road, and I figured, well, I'm either going to get him or I'm going to spook him, but either way, I'm going to know if this is going to work or not. So I got him fired up, and I kept him gobbling, and I had to cut and yelp at him for 2 minutes nonstop on a diaphragm call, and eventually he came in and I shot him. But really, to me, as long as you're being realistic, that turkey may not know the difference of what you're doing from day to day. As long as you're being realistic and your cadence is normal and your rhythm is good, you have good tonal qualities in the call that you're using, whether it's a friction call or a diaphragm call or, you know, maybe a trumpet or a tube call, whatever that is, as long as you sound realistic, a turkey is not necessarily going to immediately think, oh, that's a hunter, that's a real hen. So to me, I would rather play it on what that turkey's doing and let that dictate what I'm going to do. But when I sit down to work that turkey, I'm not going to show him my hand right away. I'm going to make him tell me what he needs and what he wants before I start just haphazardly throwing different things at him. So I guess I'm somewhere more in the middle on that one. But that was a situation that I could remember from a couple of years ago where I tried a couple different things. It didn't work. And I remember somebody saying earlier in the year that they had a couple turkeys that acted the same way, and they really had to lay on them with a call, and they got them to come in, and it worked. So I just tried it. And that's another thing, too, is you can't be afraid to try things. You know, maybe that's a different scenario for a lot of hunters if you have a limited amount of property you can hunt. I'm very lucky. We have a lot of public ground where I live. So if I screw up on one turkey, oh, well, it sucks, but you know what? I know where there's other gobblers, and it's just a matter of time before you get another opportunity to sit down and work another one.
So the first week has unfolded, and we're going into week two. Now, I'm sure this is when a lot of people take vacation off, and they might hunt, you know, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, and, you know, hunt it hard, put the pressure on these birds first week. Now we're going into weekend two and second week and stuff, and you brought up a great point about the realism in calling, and that would separate you. So there's all kinds of different levels of turkey out there. Turkey hunters out there on public ground talking to the birds that you're playing with, and it creates this wide spectrum of just chaos. I mean, I always think of that picture of like them taking like 25 different turkeys and then meshing it into one picture, and it's like this awkward looking sporadic crazy bird with you know, feathers in places they don't belong and everything else, because it's just probably awkward in my human mind. So With all these crazy turkey calls going on, what is going to set you apart in your mind from adding realism to your call? What makes a person go from just another average Joe yakking at a hen, at a gobbler, trying to get him to gobble, versus I'm going to make this sound like a real hen and convince this bird, hey, I'm the real deal over here?
One of the biggest things, at least, that I pick up on from hearing other hunters call in the woods is a lot of people call and they're monotone. They're really flat when they call. You've probably talked to similar people in your life where when they talk like this, and it's like, oh, I went out yesterday and we heard a turkey and it was fun. But they don't put any inflection in it, and they don't get excited at all when they're telling you this. Like, you can't even tell if they enjoyed it or not. And that's the biggest thing to me, especially if you listen to somebody cut, because a cut should be a high note and a low note and maybe a note in the middle. But it needs to be high, low, high, low. So if you hear somebody cut and somebody yelp, you can normally tell if they have spent any time around turkeys, if they've listened to turkeys, if they practice or even really know what they're doing, because unless they have that distinct high to low in their calling, it normally isn't going to get that response from the turkey. At least that's one thing that I've picked up on, is making sure that you're not calling flat and monotone, and that you're changing your calls out at a frequency you need to, too. You know, you may have a mouth call that's your favorite call, but if it's starting to lose some of its crispness, it's time to upgrade and get another one, you know, of whatever that call may be. But really, to me, that's one of the easiest ways to tell a hunter from a bird, other than a lot of hunters overcall. You know, that's really situationally, that's another rabbit hole that you and I could go down here, but a lot of hunters, they call and they never give that turkey time to respond. You know, a lot of times a hen will not call over a gobbler. When she hears them, she stops and at least pauses and listens.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes she'll break in on him if he gobbles and cut him off, or he will cut her off. But a lot of times, if you completely call over her, yeah, on the aggressive nature, sometimes that can work and it can get her to come in. But, you know, calling too much, too loud, that's another thing that is a big mistake a lot of people make. When a turkey's in the limb especially, you don't want to go full bore with real loud, aggressive calling, because it's not normally natural. Yeah, they're going to get louder the closer to daylight that you get oftentimes, if they're yelping and the hens are starting to get excited. But normally you don't want to start cutting and yelping at a turkey when it's on the limb. You know, call to it, let the turkey know you're there. Again, each situation could depict a little bit different situation or scenario, but for the most part, the people that you hear that are walking around real early cranking on a box call, you can normally tell, I don't think they really necessarily understand what they're out there doing.
That's a great point, and I'd like to elaborate on that a little bit, because I've experienced that myself. In fact, I experienced it opening day hunt. I was working some birds and I heard a hen come in, and when I first heard it, I thought, oh, that's a hen. And I thought she was actually bringing a gobbler into us. But as the hunt went on, there was two things that stood out to me that made me realize this was a hunter, and it happened pretty quick. So the first thing was the yelps. It was exactly what you said. The yelp sounded the same. It was the same amount of notes every time. It was the same speed, and there wasn't a lot of fluctuation and change in her tone. It was the same yuck, 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 yuck. Yuck, 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 yuck. I was like, okay, that sounds like somebody who's taking a pot call and they're making a circle, or they're making circles repeatedly when they're doing that yelp. And a lot of time, that's what I find when people yelp too fast on a pot call. They're making short little circles. They're not making a C, or they're not making a bigger circle. It's just these short little circles. Yep, 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 yep. The second thing that was basically what sealed the deal for me was exactly what you just said. My dad, I was sitting with him, and he's like, I think that's a hen. And so I waited until the call was done, because at the same time, there's a bird gobbling, right? So I waited till their calling was done, and I did a couple of soft yelps, like a couple clucks into a soft yelp, and it immediately called over me. And it did it again. And right away, I thought, that is a person. Because if I was talking to a turkey and she heard me, she'd listen to me. And then when I was done, then she'd talk back to me. But the bird, so to speak, kept talking over me and just kept yelling in the same yelp. And that was what made me say, this is not a turkey. This is a hunter. And this is not really a realism to calling. And with that same yelp, one of the things that I've tried to break myself, because I used to do that too, one of the things I've tried to do to break that is I've noticed a lot of hens, when they're feeding around, but they might start to talk to a gobbler, I've heard a lot of times they do exactly what you just talked about earlier, starting soft and then building progression. And it usually starts with a cluck, cluck, yelp, 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 yelp. And like they start building and they change the like under their breath to maybe a little bit louder. And it's not always the same amount of notes. It's not always the same speed. And then all of a sudden they might go into a yelp that gets a little bit louder. And then they might take the back end notes, those last three notes, and they might make them a little bit more softer, maybe not softer, but they don't yep as hard on them. So like she's changing how, like I've heard hens do that. So just little things like that to try to add realism to your calling. Does it always work? No, but I mean that's just little tidbits that I've picked up on versus the same yuck 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 yuck.
Exactly. And another thing too is a lot of people when they're like if they're walking and calling, they call too much before they listen. Like you don't want to make these real long assembly type yelps if you're cutting and yelping on whatever call you're using. Yelp or cut or both, but make it short, because a lot of times if you get a turkey to respond, he may cut you off in the middle and you don't want to miss it if you're calling too loud.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And you brought up a good point that I think a lot of people don't think about or don't realize. And that's that turkeys communicate. They don't talk over turkeys. So they talk and they listen. And then when one gobbles, it's not immediately just keep calling to him sometimes. Sometimes it's communicate with him. A pause, I think, adds realism. And maybe I'm putting too much thought into this and I'm overthinking this, but I do notice when birds talk to each other, there's very rarely, except when they're in fighting situations and, you know, they're getting close proximity to each other. And I've seen hens, you know, yakking back and forth at each other. There's not a real long pause there, but most of the time they're talking to each other.
Oh, without a doubt. There's a lot of your hunters out there who are more successful, that are better callers. They understand more of what turkeys do in certain situations, so they can build up to that situation like you just talked about. You know, they know where to add in the clucks and the yelps to make it all sound to flow together. And that's one thing that a lot of people could really learn from listening to real turkeys, like treetop turkeys. And then you'll really notice it if you get into calling contests, especially if you listen to the Grand National Calling Championships that the NWTF has on YouTube. Listen to the men's finals, and you can tell the callers that really spent a lot of time listening to real turkeys and added a lot of realism into their calling just based on how they set up scenarios and cadences. And they have multiple birds talking back and forth. There's scenarios where you have a hen that wakes up and flies down from the roost and then begins feeding. Or you've got other ones where there's a mixed flock of hens and poults and jakes, and they start to get together and then they start to fight. So you have to add in assembly yelps, sometimes kiki runs, gobbler yelps, jake yelps, fighting purrs, mock a fight. So by doing that and listening to some of that, you can see how this all flows together. And to your point earlier, Mitchell, it's a conversation. It's not just a bunch of noise and racket that's thrown together. And I think that's something a lot of people don't spend enough time with. You know, calling is important. Yeah, you can kill turkeys and not be a good caller. I'm not going to say you have to be a good caller, but when you get into this part of the season where the turkeys have been pressured, and maybe it's a gobbler, it's got a bunch of hens, if you're able to be more realistic of a caller and you're in the right situation in the right place in the woods where they want to be, you're going to be a lot more successful by being a realistic caller than someone that just goes out and makes a bunch of racket, because the turkeys can associate with that and think, oh, maybe that's so-and-so. I haven't seen them for a couple of days, and maybe they'll be in that mood that they're going to go over and check things out.
So you talked earlier about, you know, working birds, give them a few days, and if they're not talking or they're not cooperating, you might move on to a different area and circle back later. Well, let's play the scenario out where it's just one of those seasons where it just doesn't seem like anything you do is working. It doesn't matter where you go. It doesn't matter what you call, how you call. Birds just aren't cooperating. They're really not talking. You bounce from place to place this first week, and you go through into the second week. And it can really start to play on you. Do you have any situations of how you may adjust to or regroup in those situations? Do you write it out and do the whole, you know, turkeys aren't always talking loud, I'm going to sit in these areas type things and quote unquote deer hunt them? Or do you have other ways of trying to regroup and restructure to maintain, you know, some keeping that flow that you want to keep on going for through the turkey season?
I have attempted, and I have deer hunted turkeys before if that's my only option. I really don't enjoy that, so I don't typically do that anymore. So what I'll typically do in those situations is, I'll either try to roost them, and I'll get as close as I can to those turkeys in the dark. And when I mean dark, I don't mean it, you know, and the birds are chirping. I mean, I'll get in there and sit down at 4 or 4:30 in the morning. So you're getting up, you know, real early, but I want to be in there and get as tight as I think I can get without spooking them. Because if you can, what I've noticed is if you can get in tight on a roosted turkey, especially if he's got hens or has just been difficult to kill, your odds of getting him to come in, if you're inside the bubble, as they say, you know, inside 60 yards, your chances of getting him to come in have just gone up at least twofold, in my opinion. I've seen that situation play out a couple of different times where I had a gobbler with a bunch of hens, tried to get him to come in 2-3 days in a row, and I'd see him out in front of me at 75 or 100 yards, but they would never come in because he's got everything he needs right there. So I heard him that night, and he was almost in the same tree, so I snuck in there in the dark, and I got right next to him. I didn't think I was as close as I was, but he gobbled, and he was about 45 yards away from me. Sat down, I think I called to him one time, he hit the ground, and he walked like right to me. I think I shot him at 10 yards. But that's a lot of that comes down to if they start not doing what turkeys should be doing, that's what I start to do a lot is I'll spend more time trying to roost them or really figure out what trees they're in and what direction they're going to go when they hit the ground and try to really reverse engineer what they're doing and figure out how you can get in tighter on them in the dark. Because if they're not going to do what you want them to do and they're more quiet, if you can get in tighter to them in the limb, there's a much better chance he thinks that you're one of his harem that is roosted close by. Because sometimes they're in the same tree, sometimes they're 30, 40 yards apart. And if you can get inside that bubble and be undetected, a lot of times he'll come down and come in and see what's going on. If that doesn't work, then oftentimes I'll change elevation. Maybe you have to go north or south, dependent on what you think is going on. I know there's some people here and some hunters in my neck of the woods that swear by that. They live south of me, and they say at the end of the season, they'll drive north 45 minutes or an hour, and they said it's like it was a week before that. I can't say I've really kept track of that and really experienced that, but it could make sense depending on what your turkeys are doing and what the elevation change is, right. But it makes sense if you think like one part of the state to the other. Like if you go from Pittsburgh to closer to the New York border, yeah, things could get a lot better, you know, especially the last week of the season. If it's been hot and humid where you're at and it's cooler and it's spring's not as far along, you know, it might be a couple of days or a week later and turkeys still may want to gobble up there. So I'm not afraid to make some drastic moves. And usually that's the time of the year where I'm not afraid to cover more ground if something's not going the way that I want it to go. But the biggest thing to me is you got to keep going. As they say, embrace the suck, embrace the mosquitoes, embrace the bugs, because the season's winding down. It's going to be over in a shorter amount of time. And then you're going to have to wait a whole year to get back out there. So suck it up, lace your boots. Take some water, take some snacks with you, maybe pack a lunch and just keep covering ground and bouncing around. And eventually you're going to stumble on some hot sign. And once you find the turkeys in those situations, don't leave them. Maybe that means you need to roost them. Sometimes they don't gobble. And that's going to mean listening for wing beats when they come out of the trees. Maybe you'll hear hens tree calling or fly down cackles or anything, but you just want to look for clues, find out where they're roosting and get in as close as you can. And you know, hopefully that'll help to flip the switch in your favor.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you about that. You talked about roosting and you pretty much already answered the question, but I was going to ask you, like, I've just not had a lot of good luck roosting birds as the season goes on. To be honest with you, I haven't had that much luck roosting birds in general. And I do blame that partially, and keep this in mind, I haven't done it as much. I'm not been a diligent go roost birds, but when I've tried it, I've been pretty unsuccessful, and I think it's just the amount of times that I've done it. But with that, do you change the roosting birds, quote unquote, tactics and strategy as you go through the season? If you go through week one, and I feel like every Tom, Dick, and Harry's going to be running a hooter and this and that and stuff, will you change that up, or will you, you know, keep doing the same things to try to locate that roosted bird?
Now, if I've been hunting a turkey and he's been beating me and I kind of have a general idea of where he roosted that morning, I'm not afraid to go back in there. I'll usually just take my turkey vest with me, take a pair of binoculars and get comfortable in a place where you can either, if he's not going to gobble on the limb to your point, because yeah, I experience that often. More times than not, you go out and you don't hear anything. But those couple times that you do and he gobbles at night, even if it's one time, you might not know what tree he's sleeping in, but you've at least got a good starting point for the morning. So if I have time, I'll go, but I'm not going to say I go every day. You know, you've got a lot of responsibilities at home other than hunting. But if I'm out of state hunting somewhere, we make it an effort to go every single night, even if we're just going to glass some fields if it's raining out and it's kind of miserable and crappy. You could see turkeys walk into a field, you know, right at last light. And that's going to give you a really good clue for where you need to be in the morning. Because a lot of times they're going to be in a lot better mood in the morning, and you didn't hear anything on that ridge at night, and you come back in the morning and they're gobbling their brains out. You never know. But if I know where the turkey is, I usually won't get too aggressive on trying to get them to gobble at night. I'll just usually go out there and sit and listen and see if I see him. Sometimes he'll come back to roost and you'll see him fly up, and then you'll really, you know, have all the information you need. You just get in there super early in the morning and pick your way through the dark, sit down and get ready. But if not, and I'm covering ground in places maybe I haven't been before, I'll hoot. I know there's some people that'll they'll get a long box or a boat paddle and they'll cut and yelp on it. Sometimes that works. There's different locator calls out there you can try depending on what part of the country you're hunting in. I know when I hunted Wyoming a long time ago, and out there, obviously, you've got elk. Turkeys gobble at elk bugling. I heard elk bugle in April out there, and turkeys were gobbling at it when they heard it, you know, just like they do an owl hoot in a lot of the country. You know, a hawk whistle, different sounds like that. I've heard them gobble at trains. Even people slamming their car doors, you know. I'm not saying go out and slam your car door and blow the horn, but turkeys will gobble at different sounds. Another thing that a lot of people overlook, and you have to, this is, you know, a safety thing as well, but if you're getting a storm, a lot of times those turkeys lose their minds gobbling at thunder in the distance. So just because it's going to rain and it's going to thunder, might not be the worst situation to go out and try and listen and see if you can hear one gobble at the claps of thunder. You know, you have to look at the lightning and the weather and make sure you're not going to put yourself in harm's way by doing that. But a couple of times I've been caught in the woods in a rainstorm at night and turkeys start gobbling their heads off when they start hearing the thunder. Or a coyote starts to howl distantly. You know, maybe you'd be lucky enough to hear a coyote howl, and sometimes a turkey will gobble back to it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, really, if I'm on a bird I've been on, I'll get in there, see if I can hear or see him go up or hear the wing beats. If not, either walk ridges or, you know, ride a mountain bike around and cover more ground that way. I feel like turkeys get used to hearing gravel popping, and then they start to associate that with danger from a hunter, and they won't gobble at an owl hoot if they hear a truck drive up a gravel road. And then they hear an engine shut off. So that's something to keep in mind, too. You know, turkeys get wary of that in certain situations if you've had a lot of pressure in that area. But, yeah, I'll go out as much as I can to roost, but it's not something I do every day, because when you get that information, it's valuable. Normally what I've found is if a gobbler's going to gobble at night, he's going to be in the right mood in the morning.
That's a great point. Well, hey, I think this has been a great conversation. It keeps me, you know, thinking and trying to keep think as straight as possible and not let my mind go amok when I listen to somebody else's thought process and strategy to keep me grounded in that. So I appreciate that. Before we go, is there anything about this next, you know, week two, so to speak, that we didn't talk about that you might want to, you know, just be aware of or just bring up before we close this one out?
Absolutely. And the biggest thing to me is safety. You know, with the amount of additional people in the woods and people doing different tactics that in Pennsylvania are not legal, make sure that you fully are aware of what your target is. Make sure it's a legal turkey. Make sure you see the beard. Make sure you positively identify it at least two times. Don't shoot at movement. Don't shoot at red, white, and blue, or towards sound or any of that. Make sure what you're shooting at and beyond is safe, and it's a turkey, and it's a legal turkey. It's a gobbler with a beard. I just saw something online, I didn't get a chance to read the article yet, that somebody was shot in Pennsylvania yesterday from a hunting accident. You know, it can happen to any of us. It can happen at any time. doesn't matter how experienced you are. Talked about sleep deprivation earlier. When you're delirious and you haven't been sleeping and you're just thinking about trying to kill this turkey, your mind can play tricks on you. We've all had it happen, maybe sitting in a tree stand in the dark and you see what you think is an antler in the dark and then the sun comes up and it's a stick. You know, so double check and triple check what you're thinking is a turkey before you decide to pull a trigger, because once you shoot, you cannot bring that back. So make sure that you're being safe when you're out there. Avoid red, white, and blue in your clothes. Do not reap turkeys in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's not legal. It's not safe. It doesn't matter if it's on private property or not. People still trespass. Accidents can happen. You know, nobody does it on purpose. Things can happen. And above all else, make sure you enjoy yourself. You know, if you kill a turkey, that's great. If you don't kill one, that's fine too. Have fun with your family and friends, and just make sure you're enjoying being outside and spending time in the woods this time of year, because it's a great time to be out. You know, the woods came alive again. You're seeing the woods wake up after being asleep all winter long. Enjoy it. Try to learn something from it. And I think you guys are going to have a great spring and be more successful keeping that kind of attitude in mind.
Absolutely. I really like that you ended with that. And the last thing I just thought of, last time I had you on, I believe that you shared a code that people who listened could buy turkey calls from you. And I you know, Long Branch Game Calls, you talked a little bit about your game call business and everything else you got going. And, you know, people still might want to buy turkey calls mid-season. I'm sure it's going to happen here and there. So just please, real quick, where can people find you and look up what you got? And if they want to add to their arsenal, you know, laying on them.
Absolutely. So, local retailers, please support those. If you're around the St. Mary's area, Heppler's in Brockway, Elk County Ammo and Arms in St. Mary's. We're in a bunch of Nittany Minute Marts throughout the area. I'm sure I'm forgetting some other stores. On our website, longbranchgamecalls.com. And if you guys are looking to buy anything from our website, you can save some money by using the discount code P.A. Woodsman, P-A-W-O-O-D-S-M-A-N, and that'll save you 15% off of anything on our website. If you guys need some calls mid-season or want to try something new, we have them on the website, have a variety of different mouth calls, anything from calls that are easier to use, more beginner-friendly, or for folks that don't like to blow a call that hard. Have a lot of good options out there. Have some nice call bundles on there. If you want to save some money, bundle different calls together, a couple of mouth calls with a friction call, and just a lot of good options if you're looking to try something new.
I love it, Jake. Thanks for coming on the show again.
I appreciate it, Mitchell. And good luck the rest of the season.
You too.